On this 30th day of April, 2011, we are in Elatra and we're reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 4, Sri Madhavendra Puri's devotional service, starting text 103. Gaura haite aila tui vairagi brahman. Puri Goshai Raki Latari Kariya Yatan
Puri Goshai Raki Latari
Kariya Yatan. Now, I forget, do we chant this one? Do I go over again?
It's whatever you like. If you have a lot of verses, you can pick one, we all put together.
Alright, let's do this one. Ngoda Haite Aila Dvi Vairagi Brahman. Puri Goshai Rakila Tari Kariya Yatan.
Puri Goshai Rakila Yatan.
Goda Haite Aila Dvi Vairagi Brahman.
Goda Haite Aila Dvi Vairagi Brahman.
Puri Goshai Rakila Tari Kariya Yatan.
Puri Goshai Rakila Tari Kariya Yatan.
Vairagi Brahman
Puri Goshai Rakila Tare Kariya Yatan.
Puri Goshai Rakila Tare Kariya Yatan.
Gaura Haite Aila Dui Vairagi Brahman.
Gaura Haite Aila Dui Vairagi Brahman. Puri Goshai Rakil Tare Kariya Yatan.
Gaura Haite Aila Dvi Vairagi Brahman.
Puri Goshai Rakil Tare Kariya Yatan.
Puri Goshai Rakil Tare Kariya Yatan.
Translation: eventually, two Brahmins in the renounced order arrived from Bengal, and Madhavendra Puri, who liked them very much, kept them in Vrindavan and gave them all kinds of comforts. That's good. So, just to bring us up to speed here, this is the account of Madhavendra Puri's discovering the Gopal Didi buried in Vrindavan, and excavating it with the people there, and then installing in a temple. And then day after day, if you recall, all the villages around nearby would bring all the food stuff they had, and they had a big anakut. Anakut means a big mountain of food. We do it on Govardhan Puja. There's a big mountain of food prepared, and everybody eats, from the Brahmins down to the dogs. Everybody gets prasadam. That's anakut. And so that's going on, and gradually these Brahmins came, and he's installing them. He's training them, and they're going to take over the deity worship and in perpetuity. That's what's going to happen. And I'll just chant. Se dvi shishya kare seva samapila, raja seva hoy purira ananda badila. These two were then initiated by Madhavendra Puri, and he entrusted them with the daily service of the Lord. This service was performed continuously, and the worship of the deity became very gorgeous. Thus, Madhavendra Puri was very pleased. Purport. The six Goswamis and their followers started many temples, such as the temples of Govinda, Gopinath, Madana Mohan, Radha Damodar, Shyama Sundar, Radha Ramana, and Gokulananda. The disciples of the Goswamis were entrusted with the Seva Puja, or deity worship, of these temples. It was not that the disciples were family members of the original Goswamis. All the Goswamis were in the renounced order of life. And Jiva Goswami, in particular, was a lifelong brahmachari. At present, Saivites assume the title of Goswami on the basis of their being engaged as Saivites of the deity. The Saivites, who have inherited their positions, now assume proprietorship of the temples, and some of them are selling the deity's property as if it were their own. However, the temples did not originally belong to these Saivites. So we're going to go on through text 11, and then we're going to discuss. E mata vatsar dvi karila sevan, ekad dina puri goshai dekila swapan. In this way, the deity worship in the temple was very gorgeously performed for 2 years. Then one day, Madhavendra Puri had a dream. Gopal kahi puri amar thapa nahi yai, malayaja chandan lepa tabe se judai. In his dream, Madhavendra Puri saw Gopal, who said, "My bodily temperature still has not decreased. Please bring sandalwood from the Malaya province and smear the pulp over my body to cool me." Purport. The deity of Gopal had been buried within the jungle for many years, and although he was installed and was offered thousands of pots of water, he still felt very hot. He therefore asked Madhavendra Puri to bring sandalwood from the Malaya province. Sandalwood produced in Malaya is very popular. That province is situated on the western Ghat, and the hill Nilagiri is sometimes known as Malaya Hill. This Nilagiri is the famous Nilachala. This is the hill where the Jagannath temple is. So that's what he's talking about here. That's why he tells him to go to Puri. The word Malayaja is used to indicate the sandalwood produced in Malaya province. Sometimes the word Malaya refers to the modern country of Malaysia. Formerly, this country also produced sandalwood, but now they have found it profitable to produce rubber trees. Although the Vedic culture was once prevalent in Malaysia, now all the inhabitants are Muslims. The Vedic culture is now lost in Malaysia, Java, and Indonesia. Malayaja anajana nila chala hoite, anye hoite nahi tumi chala ha twadite. Bring sandalwood pulp from Jagannath Puri. Kindly go quickly. No, since no one else can do it, you must. Swapna deki puri kosanira hoila premavesh, brabo agya palibari gela purvadesh. After having this dream, Madhavendra Puri Goswami became very glad due to ecstasy of love of Godhead. And in order to execute the command of the Lord, he started east toward Bengal. Seva nirbanda loka karila sthapan, agya magi goradeshi karila gaman. Before leaving, Madhavendra Puri made all the arrangements for regular deity worship, and he engaged different people in various duties. Then, taking up the order of Gopal, he started for Bengal. Shantipura aila advaita acharya raghare, purira prema deki acharya ananda antare. When Madhavendra Puri arrived at the house of Advaita Acharya in Shantipur, the Acharya became very pleased upon seeing the ecstatic love of Godhead manifest in Madhavendra Puri. Dana tani mantra laila yatana kadina chalila nakine puri tanra diksha dina. Advaita Acharya begged to be initiated by Madhavendra Puri. After initiating him, Madhavendra Puri started for South India. In this connection, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments on Advaita Acharya's initiation by Madhavendra Puri, who was a sannyasi in the disciplic succession of the Madhva Sampradaya. According to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Kiba Vipra Kiba Nyasi Shudra Kene Noi, Jai Krishna Tattva Veta Sehi Guru Hoi. A person may be a Brahmin, a sannyasi, a Shudra, or whatever, but if he is well conversant in the science of Krishna, he can become a guru. C.C. Madhya 8.128. This statement is supported by Sri Madhavendra Puri. According to the Pancharatra injunction, only a household of Brahman can initiate. Others cannot. When a person is initiated, it is assumed that he has become a Brahman. Without being initiated by a proper Brahman, one cannot be converted into a Brahman. In other words, unless one is a Brahman, he cannot make another a Brahman. A grahastha Brahman partaking of the Varnashram Dharma institution can secure various types of paraphernalia to worship Lord Vishnu through his honest labor. Actually, people beg to be initiated by these household of Brahmins just to become successful in the Varnashram institution or to become free from material desires. It is therefore necessary for a spiritual master in the grahastha ashram to be a strict Vaishnav. A spiritual master from the sannyas order has very little opportunity to perform archana, deity worship. But when one accepts a spiritual master from the transcendental sannyasis, the principle of deity worship is not at all neglected. To implement this conclusion, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave us his opinion in the verse Kiba Vipra Kiba Nyasi, etc. This indicates that the Lord understood the weakness of society in its maintaining that only a grihastha Brahman should be a spiritual master. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu indicated that it does not matter whether the spiritual master is a grihastha, householder, a sannyasi, or even a shudra. A spiritual master simply must be conversant in the essence of the Shastra. He must understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only then can one become a spiritual master. Diksha actually means initiating a disciple with transcendental knowledge by which he becomes freed from all material contamination. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshu unmidatam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So there's quite a bit to discuss here. And we'll begin at X 103. So, again, just to reiterate, the deity has been installed and worship is going on. But Madhavendra Puri, he's responsible for this deity. He found the deity, installed the deity, and he instituted the worship. And so this is part of our tradition, is that this is why Srila Prabhupada, there's a nice story there. And when he went to Australia, I think it was Melbourne, and the deity, the devotees, there were just a few devotees, they were all very new, and yet Srila Prabhupada felt the necessity of installing deities for the benefit of the devotees and pushing on the movement. And so he initiated Brahmins who had just barely been in the movement even a few months, if that. And then he installed the deities and he prayed to the deity. He said, I have to go. He's on his worldwide tour. I'm placing you in the hands of these new devotees. Please inspire them to take care of you properly. He felt responsible for all the deities that he installed. This is the philosophy. So only, it's after 2 years now. 2 years after the deity has been installed and it's going on. And now these Brahmins come. They're in the renounced order. So the sannyasi Brahmins, he liked them very much. They had come from Bengal, or Pukka Brahmins, as we say. So Madhavendra Puri, he initiated them and he entrusted them with the daily service of the Lord. And then it went on continuously. So this holds true for us also, is that when we take on the responsibility of the deity worship, we should feel that we're bound to that. How's the deity doing? We can't just, and that therefore we have to train up new devotees to come up to the standard, so that then eventually when we retire or leave our bodies or we take sannyas or whatever, go to Vrindavan, the deity worship will go on nicely. So he entrusted them, and then only then did the Lord come to him in a dream and continue the pastime. Now this is a theme here in Madhavendra Puri's pastime. Four times we find these things, these instructions coming in dreams. You remember the first time Madhavendra Puri was he was asleep. Well, he was in Vrindavan and he dozed off. And then when Gopal came to him and offered him the milk, that was actually, he was awake at that time. Then he has the dream and he comes to him and he says, I'm buried, bring me out. So that's the first one. Then he has a second dream now that he's sent to Puri. I just see the advancement. The dream is occurring and he takes it so seriously. This is a 1,000-mile trek. He wasn't taking a train. He had to go and plan to carry back. There's 80 pounds of sandalwood. And it describes here, you'll read in the next few verses as you go on with this, that this, everything was broken up into these little provinces run by the Muslims, and they had to pay tax, and it was difficult, austerity. And so he didn't think twice. Oh, this is an order from Gopal. Now I have to go to Jagannath Puri and get the sandalwood. And then, of course, there's the dream later on for when Gopinath steals in Ramuna, when Gopinath steals the sweet rice for him and became sure, right? So the Pujari gets the dream and says, yes, I've stolen the sweet rice, now give it to Madhavendra Puri. And then later on his way back, Vrindavan with the sandalwood. Was he still in Ramuna? I think he came back. Yeah, he came back to Ramuna with the cheer. And he had another dream. So you don't have to go. It's okay. You know, we are one. Gopinath and Gopal are one. You can just smear it on the. So those pujaris were, whoa, here's 80 pounds of sandalwood we can use in the hot summer, we can use on Gopinath. They're very ecstatic. So the dreams are very prominent here. And this is also evidence of his advancement, that Krishna is coming so often in his dreams and giving him instructions that are moving everything forward. So this is the principle. Now he has the dream, and he goes on. And Gopal is speaking to him. I'm still hot, you know, and so he's going to Malaya. So this Malaya is prominent. You'll find that it often comes up when they refer to sandalwood, the quality of sandalwood, the quantity of the sandalwood is great, and the breeze from the Malaya hills is coming down and perfuming everything because it's all sandalwood smell. So that's where all the sandalwood is, so he takes off. He became very glad due to the ecstasy of God and to execute the order he started for Bengal. Then he made sure everybody, not just those pujaris, but everybody was properly engaged in their duties, and then he left. Then he departed for Bengal, which is on the way to Orissa. So that's why it's mentioned, and he arrives at this house of Advaita Acharya. Now along the way, I believe it's along the way, if I'm not mistaken, he met Nityananda, right? He met Nityananda. It's wonderfully described in the Chaitanya Bhagavata, this meeting of Madhavendra Puri and Lord Nityananda. And they, for days, they were just ecstatic. They were chanting. They were sharing realizations. And I think Nityananda had some people with him. Madhavendra had some aides with him. And they were just amazed at this wonderful meeting, an ecstatic meeting of Nityananda and Madhavendra Puri. You can read about it in the Chaitanya Bhagavata. So then Advaita Acharya comes. Now this is interesting. Advaita Acharya is, after all, he's Mahavishnu, right? He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And yet, just like Lord Chaitanya, he showed that the necessity of taking Diksha. And very very ecstatic to see Madhavendra Puri and his high level of devotion. Very pleased. And he begged him for initiation. And he gave him that initiation. Now, forgive me if I forget, but wasn't it Haridas Thakur also took initiation at that time? Because Haridas was staying with Advaita. Anyway, so then he started, so then he continued on to South India. You know the geography, Bengal is quite a ways from Orissa, it's on the way. And in this purport, which we'll discuss a little bit, probably gets into the whole principle of initiation. And this famous verse, Kiba Vipra Kiba Nyasi. Now this was spoken to Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy was a Kayasta. He wasn't a Brahmin. They're like clerks. Of course, his spiritual elevation was extremely high. But externally, he was an agent for the king. And he was helping to run that South India province where he was. And he wasn't considered a Brahmin, and he wasn't considered, you know, therefore very learned. But therefore, when Lord Chaitanya started questioning him, taking the role of a student, he felt hesitant. So, well, how can I speak to you? You're Nimai Pandit, you're a sannyasi. How can I instruct you? And so this verse was spoken in order to encourage Ramananda Roy. What does it matter if it's a vipra or a sannyasi or even a shudra if Jai Krishna Tattva Veta Se Guru Hoy? Se Guru Hoy. That if one understands the Krishna Tattva, the science of devotional service, Sambandha Avideya Priyojana, well versed in the Shastra, and of course practicing and realized, then one can be a guru no matter what you're born in. Even born outside Varnashram, what to speak of shudra. And Srila Prabhupada, in the Madhya 8.128, he talks about this, he gives a more extensive purport on this verse. And on the basis of this verse and others like it, he felt confident in coming to America and the West in general, which were outside the Varnashram system. Antyajas means that more fallen than Shudra. If you read Shudra, about the Shudra is in the Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto and the 7th canto, there's a description. It's quite advanced compared to, you know, me. Yeah, I don't know about you. But, you file certain rules and regulations. You're happy to be a servant of the higher classes, you know. No, we don't even have Shudras here where we are. So, even they, Srila Prabhupada was confident on the basis of Shastra, could be purified by the process of devotional service and come to the point of being gurus. All kinds of gurus. Shiksha gurus, Diksha gurus, Vartnaprabdarshika gurus. And therefore, it even encouraged his devotees. There's many letters and statements to that effect. So the interesting thing here is that the tradition was that this process of Diksha, now Diksha, and this wonderful verse that Prabhupada refers to at the end of the purport, Divyam Gyanam Yato Dadhyat Kuryat Papasya Sankshayam Tasma Diksheti Saprokta Deshikais Tatva Kovidai. Diksha is the process by which one can awaken his transcendental knowledge and vanquish all reactions caused by sinful activity. A person expert in the study of the revealed scriptures knows this process as Diksha. So this is a famous verse. It's a Divyam Gyanam, the D. It's one of these verses that analyzes the very word Diksha. The D stands for the Divya in Divyam Gyanam. And the Ksha has to do with the Dadya, Sankshayam, giving the Papa. Sankshaya means to destroy the Papa, the sin. So, in the context of this purport and the context of this passage here in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the need is for elevating someone with the knowledge so that they can, large part, so they can perform deity worship. That's a lot of what Diksha has to do. Brahman initiation. So you're fully conversant with the knowledge of that. But here is described that the tradition was that only grahastha Brahmins could give Diksha. So this indicates that it's a... the sannyasis weren't giving Diksha. But this was not followed by Madhavendra Puri. And Prabhupada explains here that when you... you get to the Vaishnav tradition is different. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he gave so much initiation, and Srila Prabhupada also did. And so on the basis of Kipa Vipa Kipa Nyasi, anyone can give Diksha. Who is qualified? It's not restricted by this tradition, Grahastha Brahman. Because after all, the general principle is you live at the ashram. So the Brahmin, you know, will have a wife and they'll have a school. You know, the Brahmins traditionally teach. And so this is how the knowledge is being passed on. The sannyasis are always wandering from place to place. They generally don't do much like deity worship. They may carry a deity with them, you know, like that. And they don't have an opportunity to generally establish temples. Of course, Madhavendra Puri did that. But this principle is a restriction that has been broken by our tradition, certainly by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada. So the sannyasis also especially give initiation. So this idea, now let's just discuss this, of Diksha, being the means, initiating a disciple with transcendental knowledge by which he becomes freed from all material contamination. So there was a very nice article recently that I read in the Bhakti Gadhe. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called Diksha Without Tapa. Diksha Without Tapa. And it was, I don't know if you've seen it, it was really nice. By Kripa Moy in England. I haven't met him, but it was very astute. Very nicely written. And the idea, just as Srila Prabhupada refers in the previous purport to how someone who's in charge of this temple, the Saivites, right? They inherit, oh, now I got a temple. You know, and it becomes a source of income. You know, do a little puja, do the minimum, show the deity, and you know, give the box, and a few drops of charanamrita, and you just because. And then you know, and if there's some property, you sell it off. You know, or you. This is a gross offense. You can imagine. You know, so the by the same token, any of our the diksha can also be sold. It can also be given lightly for some material purpose. The description, the comparison he gave was, because he's in England, how you can go, I can become a lord now, or a baron. I just have to pay so many pounds, you know, and you get the title. You don't get any lands, you don't get like that, but you have the title. Then I can be called baron, this baron, that baron Dravidadas, you know, like that. You know. But it's like in the old days in the church, they would sell indulgences. This is part of the corruption. This is why the Reformation happened. You had corruption in the church among the bishops and the archbishops, even the popes. And they said, oh, this is great. Everyone's afraid of being punished by the sin and going to hell. You get plenty of fiery brimstone, you know, lectures. You're going to hell unless you get free of your sin. Oh, how can I get free of my sin? Oh, you just pay something, you know, and we give you the indulgence and you're free like that. You can see corruption. So the same thing is true with diksha. It's very it can be prestigious, you know. In the Vaishnava, I have my name, I have such and such acharya, you know, and so forth. And that spiritual master, you know, has so many followers who will then give dakshin, da 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 da, you know. But it's worthless. The point is, diksha without tapa, without austerity, without developing transcendental knowledge, is in name only. And this really pollutes the whole system. Because, like, if we understand, oh, this is Bhakta so-and-so. Okay, they're learning, they're training. Now, it's not Bhakta so-and-so. This is Govinda Das. Oh, okay, so he's been initiated. That means, if within ISKCON, oh, some amount of training, 6 months, following the principles, regulation, and it's a station. There's a recognition there. And you get a little more respect. Don't we know? Nectar of instruction. Krishneti yasigati dhammanasadriyecha. Dikshati chase. Padanabhishta bhajantabhisham. If someone is just chanting the holy name, one should offer respects in the mind. That's what it says. Krishneti yasya. He's chanting Krishna, Krishna, once or twice even. Giritam manasadriyecha. What a wonderful, but compared to all the millions of people and living entities, who never, this person has uttered the name of Krishna. How powerful that is. You know, so many lifetimes of sin are gone, and, you know, Krishna's now, you know, and we should recognize that. But if someone takes diksha, oh, we should physically offer the obeisances. You see? So, but what is that diksha? If it comes, it becomes cheapened by not, demanding or not instructing, requiring that one follow certain rules and regulations, chanting, austerity, like that, then it doesn't mean anything. So that's a very important principle in movement that Srila Prabhupada set up. And he says, I don't know if it's in this purport. This other purport that, about diksha that I was reading, that we don't immediately give initiation. You know, one has to follow for 6 months like that. And anyone who's lived in a temple knows that. So we should always remember that diksha is not a small thing. It means that one has received the knowledge. You know, everything is based on the knowledge. Srila Prabhupada came to give knowledge, not just gyan, but also vigyan. But the vigyan is dependent on one's actually practicing and surrendering and taking shelter. This Guru Ashrayam is the very first principle in the 64 that Rupa Goswami gives in his nectar, in his Bhakti Samhita Sindhu, which Prabhupada gave his nectar of devotion. What does that mean? A genuine guru, someone who's a teacher, that's what guru means, heavy teacher, is Shabde Parecha Nishnatam Brahman Rubashamashyam, is fixed in the knowledge, realized in the transcendental knowledge from the Shastra and from his own spiritual master, and Brahmani Upashamashyam has taken shelter and approached the Supreme Personality of God. Realized. So then, if one takes shelter, it means it's a surrender process. Oh, like Arjuna. And Arjuna is a good example. Of course, Sanatana Goswami, there are many good examples. Is that the first thing is, I don't know anything. It's a clean slate. I've tried to solve my problems. I've been known as very learned, you know, says Sanatana Goswami. And Arjuna, he was also making arguments from the Vedas, right, that they shouldn't fight. And then at a certain point, it has to come to, oh, I don't know. Right? He says, Karpanyadosho pahata sobhava pichamitram dharma samudha cheta. My mind is actually bewildered as to what is real dharma. What is done, what is to be done, and what is not to be done in order to achieve Shreya, the ultimate good. So the proper attitude is Yakshe Yaksyan Nishtitam Bruhitan Me Shishyastehem Shadi Mantambabam. My dear spiritual master, in this case is Krishna, of course. Now I'm asking you, I'm not going to argue with you anymore. Now, please tell me for certain, that certainty has to be there. Otherwise, doubt is going to, you know, for certain, how I can achieve my ultimate good. I'm surrendered to you. I'm a surrendered prapunnam. I'm your shishya. Shishya means one who agrees to be controlled. Prabhupada speaks about this word. It's very nice. You know, each of the Sanskrit words has a root, you know, to it. And the root of the shishya is shas. Now, this word shas is the same root for the words shastra and shastra. So we have three words, shastra, shastra, and shishya. So what's the relationship? Well, shastra, of course, we know is the scripture. But it means that a book or a set of instructions that we agree, oh, this should control me. I should abide by these rules and regulations, which may often, and you know, always, they go against my spontaneous desire, what I want to do with my senses, you know. So that's shastra. It's revealed scripture. It's coming from Krishna, and that is meant to be our guide about what not to do and what not to do. Consult the last verse of the 60th chapter. Tasma chastra pramanam te karya karya vastata. Therefore, your pramana, or your evidence about what to do and what not to do, should be the shastra. And having understood it, you should actually observe it, actually follow. This is how you can avoid being a demon, you know, or being swallowed up by those three gates that lead to hell. Kama, Krodha, and Lobha. That's, you know. So, that's the 16th chapter. So, the Shastra is there. Otherwise, Shastra. Shastra is a weapon. You know, like the Grim Reaper. You know, he's got a weapon, right? The time is a big sword. It's like the chakra, cutting everyone down. That will control you. You'll be controlled by force. So a shishya is one who agrees to be controlled by the spiritual master. That's what it means to be a shishya. Now what is the spiritual master telling you to do? What's in the shastra? So it all comes back down to knowledge, to the knowledge that Krishna gives, and are taking it in. So this is, you know, then when one is practiced in serving, surrendering, and listening to, hearing the guru, then at a certain point the initiation is given. And Prabhupada would always point out, initiation means beginning. Of course, we begin our process before initiation, but the idea is that it's a recognition that you've actually begun. And from there, you progress. So this diksha is very important to understand. And, in, you know, as Srila Prabhupada taught us, this must be spoken, because, you know, it's not simply that, yes, we are taking Srila Prabhupada's instruction here. We're reading his books, we're listening to his tapes, we're in the temple that he founded, following the procedures that he gave us. Therefore, I'm getting all this knowledge, and when I get enough of this knowledge, by studying and so forth, and following on my own way, I'm initiated. I'm now an initiated disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Because diksha means the process by which you get knowledge, right? So I'm getting knowledge. That's not what Srila Prabhupada gave us. The transmission of knowledge and the acceptance of knowledge is essential, but there needs to be a person. There needs to be a person there who is physically present. I'm not going to get into that whole thing, but that's the Ritvik argument. Is that, I can be, why not initiate from Bhaktivinoda Thakur? You know, or even Rupa Goswami. Whoever I happen to be inspired by on this study, get the knowledge, and after enough knowledge, diksha has taken place, I'm so-and-so das. Disciple of Rupa Goswami. Who says no? That's not the tradition. And we have to follow according to this tradition. Advaita Acharya, he didn't take initiation. You know, he wasn't until he found Madhava Nupuri, came to him. And he saw, this is the person he wants to be formally initiated by. So, yes, it's the process by which the knowledge is manifest, but there's also the ceremony, the changing of the name, the taking of vows, and the fire sacrifice before the devotees, and the deities, and all of that, you know, is important. So, we have a little time for questions and comments, but before we do that, I asked someone to... do you know how to work this model? Yeah, not that. The verse. I wanted a verse put up, and it's text 197 of this chapter. Madhavendra Puri's famous verse. Can you find that? You can do that, right?
What was the
number? 197 of this very chapter. 197. I'll be leaving here soon, and I wanted to see if we could do something special today, and that is learn a verse. This is Madhavendra Puri's famous verse. So before we'll have questions, I'm just going to read the run-up to this verse. After Lord Chaitanya, you know, the context here, Lord Chaitanya is on his way to Puri, and they stop, and he's reciting these pastimes about Madhavendra Puri, because they've come to, is it Ramuna? Yeah. So then, it's described, and after this whole thing, he describes, you know, Madhavendra's intense love and his devotion for Krishna in the mood of separation. After saying this, Lord Chaitanya read the famous verse. Read here means recite. Whenever they say read, they mean recite, generally speaking, especially this word, pade. Pade means recite. So he recites the famous verse of Madhavendra Puri. That verse is just like the moon. It has spread illumination all over the world. Continuous rubbing increases Malaya sandalwood. This is it. Similarly, consideration of this verse increases one's understanding of its importance. As the Kaustubha Mani is considered the most precious of valuable stones, this verse is similarly considered the best of poems dealing with the mellows of devotional service. Actually, this verse was spoken by Srimati Radharani herself, and by her mercy only was it manifest in the words of Madhavendra Puri. Only Lord Chaitanya has tasted the poetry of this verse. No fourth person is capable of understanding it. So what this means is that Radharani, Madhavendra Puri, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually understand the full import of this verse. So we're going to read that verse and maybe learn it if we can. I remember when I was working on this book. It wasn't even published. It was in Brooklyn, 75. And I read this. I said, I got to learn this verse. So I learned the verse. You know, I'm 2 years in the movement, and then learned this verse, and I was chanting it. It's very potent. All right, any discussion on Diksha? I know there's a lot of... Yeah,
the question I have is, what is the difference in the words Shiksha and Shishya? Shiksha, am I pronouncing that right? Shiksha Guru?
Yeah, Shiksha. Shiksha Guru, yes.
And Shiksha means
what? Shishya. Shishya and Shiksha. You know, I'm not that well versed in Sanskrit to see if there's actually a relation between those two. Of course, one means instruction and the other means a disciple, you know, Shishya. So whether Shiksha also has its root in this word shush, I'm not sure. I doubt it. But I mean, philosophically, there's a tremendous relationship. There's no becoming a disciple without getting instruction. It's not just a formality. It's meant to be a recognition of knowledge and practice, and the practice of that, you know, knowledge. That's why, you know, some scholar, some, you know, mundane scholar who knows all this stuff, you know, but hasn't absorbed it, is not actually surrendered, he can't be initiated. It's not that, oh, he knows X number of shlokas, there he's initiated. The actual surrender of the heart and the eagerness to hear, and this is another, you know, point, is that the service attitude and the sincerity of the disciple opens up the floodgates of the knowledge coming down from the guru. Otherwise, he doesn't want to, you know, instruct. And even the books will find, you know, we may read these books so many times, and each time is a new realization. And that's because there's a different level of surrender. On the other side, if we stop practice, then the books become uninteresting to us. You can't read. You can't, you know, Prabhupada's books are special. They're not ordinary books, you know. And your interest, your eagerness to, you know, drink in this knowledge is really a measure of your advancement, in a sense. Because it's the eagerness to hear the transcendental word. But if we're not following, it becomes very painful, because on every page, you know, surrender, surrender, no sense gratification. Okay, well, somehow you don't have time to read anymore. You know? I mean, I've seen that. It's sad. Sometimes you see on Chakra or other, you know, I get on these sites, oh, I have a full set of books for sale. You know, well, what happened? They're in your home and they're gathering dust. Okay, maybe I mix it. It's sad like that. It means at one point someone was reading and imbibing, and now it's become mundane. It's not become mundane, but their heart has become hard. So we should be careful of that.
Just a little bit more on this. When I was in Mumbai, one devotee was saying he had two Shiksha gurus in addition to his initiating guru. And so I wonder if the term Shisha applies to all of those different gurus. He's a disciple of his Shiksha guru and his Diksha guru.
There is some scope for that. That it's very nice. If you're interested in this topic, read the first chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The very first chapter of the Adi Lila deals all with different kinds of gurus, especially deals with Shiksha and Diksha. And in that chapter, the statement is there, which I remember very clearly, that one should see, should regard the Shiksha gurus and the Diksha gurus on the same level. This is a statement in there. Krishna's Kaviraj himself, he saw all the Goswamis, you know, as his Shiksha gurus, and he offers them all respect. Obviously, he quotes from them all the time. But he regarded Nityananda Prabhu, as far as I understand, as his Diksha guru. He mentions that there. So, it's definitely possible to be a Shiksha disciple of a guru. That term is there. In fact, there's a purport, because I did some research on this, where Prabhupada says, I forget who it was. Was it Srinivas Acharya? That so-and-so was a disciple, but it was a disciple of Srinivas Acharya, but I don't think it was a Diksha. He wasn't an initiating, you know, he wasn't his initiating guru. So he uses the word disciple in the Shiksha category. And even that's, you know, common parlance. You can be a disciple of Plato, you know, because you're steeped in his philosophy like that, you know, and you try to follow it. If you look up the word disciple, it means one who follows carefully the philosophy or teachings of another. So that's perfectly fine to feel like that. But the caveat is, and Prabhupada wrote letters to this extent, to this effect, is that one should not go and take shiksha from someone and that contradicts the teachings of your Diksha guru. That's a very important principle, especially in Prabhupada's time, because that was happening all the time. And that's why he said, if they say one word different from mine, it'll cause great havoc. You know, this was came on in the context early on when Mukunda Maharaj, in his innocence, was saying that Prabhupada was very ill. He said, well, Prabhupada, if you die, should we go to one of your godbrothers? You can imagine saying that later on, but you know, it was 667. And Prabhupada didn't say anything, and a tear was coming down. And he said, my spiritual masters saved me. It means we have this special relationship, you know, someone who's saved us, you know, by initiating. And if they say one word different from what I've taught you, it'll cause great confusion. And so we have to be very careful about that. But certainly within the ISKCON Sangha, you know, assuming that everyone is tuned in, or, you know, or you take a shiksha from someone who's tuned into Srila Prabhupada's teachings, then one should have respect. This is how this society goes on. It's not just only, you know, I only have respect for my Diksha guru. That's not going to work. The senior, those who are instructing, who are helping and giving, we should have very great reverence. They're helping to save us. Mother Lakshmi, you had something. Please, give them the mic.
I don't know if I finished with this topic, but I wanted to just mention something about this idea of the weight of installing deity.
Yes.
Because Revati Ramaprabhu, who's the president of Tirupati, was talking to me about the installation procedure when he moved the deities of Radha Govinda from the old temple to the new temple they just built in Tirupati. And so the Mahants from the big Tirupati Mandir, they helped with the installation, they directed it. And he had to carry a weight on his head equivalent to the weight of the deity.
Wow.
And there's pictures of him carrying this humongous stack of things on his head. And I asked him, what is that? And he said, to help you understand the weight, the severity of installing the deity, you have to carry this weight on your head for X amount of time so that you can appreciate how heavy this responsibility is, that because I'm the temple president, I have to take the responsibility for the maintenance of these deities forever. So I have to see that it goes on.
Yes.
And I thought that was very...
Yes, it's very important. I remember when I you know, those two books that came, what are they called? The Archana Pradeep. Yeah, I worked on those. You know, I remember I helped Krishna Chaitra put those together back in the mid-90s. And I remember reading that. I think it's in there, you know, about that you're responsible for perpetuity, you know, just for the worship. This is why Prabhupada didn't want these deities moved around. You know, it's such a big thing. They're situated here. They should, you know, stay, and this is an absolute necessity for it. It's a very good chapter because Madhava Nipuri took it so seriously. First, he took seriously the fact that, oh, he had to excavate the deity. You know, the deity was waiting for Madhava Nipuri because he knew he would really do it right and take it seriously. And then to see that from nothing, they had a temple, right? They built gradually, the temple was built. And then he felt responsible. He didn't go anywhere for 2 years. He stayed there to maintain it. And then he finally found somebody who he could hand it off to. Yeah. Okay, Ramanya, then I want to learn this. I want to do this verse. It's an important verse. We're out of time. Weekend.
Okay, wonderful lecture. So, just a comment. Prabhupada mentions all the Puyaris have dreams with the deities, all the spiritual masters, no difference. It's very good. You know, Prabhupada have dreams with his Guru Maharaj many times. So, Prabhupada called Archana Siddhi. You develop perfection by serving the deities. It's a special thing, Archana Siddhi. So the other thing is, Prabhupada says that we are Rupa Nugas. We follow Rupa Goswami. That's why we are Rupa Nugas. And sometimes some exceptions are the instructed spiritual master, one that gives shiksha, is more prominent than the one that gives you initiation. Like,
that's true.
In the case of Srimadbhaktivinoda Thakur.
Yes.
His instructing guru became more prominent. There's some exceptions.
Yes, that's true. This institution is kind of special, you know, because of the abundance of shiksha that's available by Srila Prabhupada. I listen to the lectures every morning, you know, Prabhupada's talks. They're not dated one moment, you know. He spoke it in 66. 68, 66, you know, even early 66, before 26 Second Avenue, there's some recordings of his speaking to the Dr. Mishra's group, you know. He's not using the word Krishna so much, you know. He talks about absolute truth, you know. But anyway, it's just as pertinent today, you know. Just like the Bhagavatam, it speaks to us today. Because these are eternal truths, you know. So we have access to it. This is unprecedented. It's not, you know, like here I'm sitting here. You know, I got all the books, all the lectures on this little device here. I can go anywhere. I've often thought, all right, I'm going to retire. I'll go to the little kuptir somewhere with no electricity. I'll just have a solar charger for this thing, and I'll sit there and I'll chant my way. But, you know, where do you hear that? This is unprecedented. So we have this access to Prabhupada's instructions forever. So really, anyone who is preaching within the bounds of ISKCON, within this institution, needs to be in tune and follow Prabhupada's mood and specifics in his instruction. There's no excuse for like, oh, that was a long time ago. That was 100 years ago. Now we have to do something different. It's always going to be present. That's the whole idea. 10,000 years, right? It's the law books. Prabhupada knew. So it's a little different now. There are many Shiksha gurus, and the successful ones are those who, for time, place, and candidate, they offer Prabhupada's teachings in a way that the person can take them up and enter into the whole world of Prabhupada's teachings. Okay, just give me 2 minutes. We're going to go over this verse. This is the verse that Madhavendra Puri spoke. This is the one that he was chanting as he disappeared from this world. This is the one that caused Ramachandra Puri to chastise his own guru and become fallen. This is the very verse. And it's described as Lord Chaitanya's whole mood and all the writings of the Goswamis and the separation, all of those the source, the seed, is this verse. Okay, so I'm going to get it up here. Okay. Here it is. So this is Madhav 4:197. Okay. So I read the introduction. All right, so I can read it. So just I'll give you the translation, and then we'll go over to synonyms. This is my little system for learning a verse. First, read the translation. What is it all about? And then the first line with the synonyms, see how they fit in. So the verse says this. This is Radharani in Vrindavan and Krishna's in Mathura. O my Lord, O most merciful Master, O Master of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Because of my not seeing you, my agitated heart has become unsteady. O most beloved one, what shall I do now? It's a very simple expression, you know, very profound, of the anxiety and the pain of separation and the highest ecstasy, Lord Chaitanya showed. So, we know the word I Nandatanuja Kinkara, right? It's the same meter as that verse in the Shikshastika. It simply means, it's an expression of great anxiety and pain. I Dina Dayadra. So Dina, we know this word, the poor, the wretched, this Dainya, we sing every morning. Dina Krishna Dase Koye. This neglected, helpless devotee of yours is praying, please lift me up and place me in some at the lotus feet. Or here, Radharani is taking his position. But you are Daya Ardra, compassionate. Now the word compassionate, Ardra literally means melting. Your heart is melting with compassion for the most fallen. That's what this first line means. And who's she addressing? Nata, her master. Krishna, of course. Hey, another expression of, you know, calling out. Hey, like, hey Krishna, hey Radha. So that's the first line. I'll chant your chant. I di nadayadra nate he.
I di nadayadra nate he. I di nadayadra nate he.
Okay, I'll blank out the screen. See if you can remember now.
I di nadayadra nate he.
I di nadayadra nate he. I di nadayadra nate he.
Okay, great. All right, screen. Second line. Now it makes it more specific. Mathuranata. Oh, the Lord of Mathura. So Radharani is in Vrindavan, it's defined. He's in Mathura. Mathuranata. Kada avalokyase. When will I see you? Very simple Sanskrit. Mathuranata kada avalokyase. Mathuranata kada avalokyase.
Mathuranata
kada avalokyase. Haydi nadayadranata he. Matadanata kadava lokasi. Simple. Okay, third line. Now the heart. Ridiyam tradaloka kataram. So ridiyam in my heart, taught you, aloka without seeing, kataram, very much aggrieved. My heart is very much aggrieved because I cannot see you. You are separated from me. Ridiyam tradaloka kataram. Vidyam tradaloka kataram. Okay, then the last line, Dahita, O beloved, right? O most beloved, Brahmyati, becomes overwhelmed. What is becoming overwhelmed? I am becoming overwhelmed. Kim karomi, what shall I do? Dahita, what shall I do now? You know, Dahita Brahmyati kim karomyaham. Dayata Brahmiti Kinkaromyaham.
Dayata Brahmiti Kinkaromyaham.
Okay, I'll say the whole verse. Haydi Nadayata Natahe.
Haydi Nadayata
Natahe. Matadanata Kadava Lokise.
Matadanata Kadava Lokise.
Vidyam Tvadaloka Kataram.
Vidyam Tvadaloka Kataram.
Dayata Brahmiti Kinkaromyaham.
Dayata Brahmiti Kinkaromyaham.
Okay, we've run out of time. This is Text 197, Chapter 4. Learn it by tomorrow. I'll check you at the Sunday feast. Okay? All glory to Srila Prabhupada.